Hello and welcome to episode 49 of A Little Bird Told Me, the freelance writing podcast that's here to help you through the highs, the lows, the absolutely brilliant and the unbelievably awfuls of running your own business. Our home on the web is at alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com, so head on over if you're not there already and subscribe to the podcast in whatever way suits you best. There's an RSS feed as well as iTunes, Stitcher Smart Radio and Podomatic subscription options, so pick whichever you fancy. Make sure you do it though, because you get a notification as soon as our new episodes are out. On the Podomatic page, you will also find links to our Facebook page, where you can come and have a chat to me and my co-host Philippa. You can post your most pressing freelance questions there, make suggestions about future episodes, and give feedback on the episodes that you've listened to so far. You'll also find links to our websites and social media feeds, as well as to other episodes, transcripts, show notes, and many of those are actually handy links to resources for freelancers, so do come and have a nosy. I'm Laurie Hartshorn, and this week I'm here without my usual co-host, the lovely Pippa. She'll be back next week as usual though, and we'll be recording another dual episode then, so stay tuned for now with me and hopefully the time will fly by. This week I'm going to be looking at how you can come up with some marketing ideas that will help you boost your freelance business. Now, while we all know that creative marketing ideas are the ideal weapon for grabbing your target market's attention, it can be hard to know where to start. You don't want to come up with something that's dull and been done already, but you don't want to go so far out that you'll scare away any prospects. So I'll be looking at a few of the key components to help you get your creative ideas off the ground, but not too far off the ground. As Pip and I have said 1,000 times, and it might actually be 1,000 now, we're nearly at episode 50, freelance writing isn't just writing. If you get into this business because you like nothing better than putting pen to paper or fingers to keyboard, that's only a small part of the battle won. A huge part, huge part of running a successful freelance writing business is marketing yourselves and your services, getting business development down to a T. If you can do your marketing in a way that grabs the attention of your target audience and makes you memorable to them, you're already a huge step ahead of the competition. Marketing isn't just about you, it's about your customer. So the key to developing some creative marketing ideas, even before you decide which fabulously inspiring thing you're going to try, is to start with some preparation. And yes, I know it's not as fun as getting stuck in, but you know what they say. They say failing to prepare is preparing to fail, and it's true, so suck it up. So firstly, decide what you're trying to achieve. Maybe you want more clients in a particular sector. Maybe you want to promote a certain type of work you do. Maybe you want to promote your blogging services, for example. Perhaps you're trying to establish yourself as an authority in a certain subsector of freelance writing, maybe technical writing, scientific writing, medical writing, academic proofreading, whatever takes your fancy. And whatever you're trying to achieve, keep that central in your mind as you brainstorm your marketing ideas, because there's no point catching people's attention with a marketing campaign if they don't know what they're supposed to think or do once they've spotted you. Jot down the core ideas behind your marketing. Really get it clear in your own mind what you want to achieve. Pop it down on a piece of paper, pin it up on a notice board, start an Excel file, get coloured post-it notes, write your objectives down somewhere where you can view them and really look over them with a clear mind. Secondly, decide who your target market is. Try and have a think, what are their motivations? If you're looking to attract small business clients, say locally to you, it's likely that cost and maybe locality is going to be a huge factor in their decision to hire you or not to hire you. If you're looking to grab the attention of a huge blue chip firm or an exclusive consultancy firm with a lot of disposable income, for example, cost might not be such a priority for them. They might be more concerned with hiring somebody who's known to be the best of the best. So put yourself to one side for a moment and think about the things that will push your ideal client's buttons. What do they want? What do they really, really want? And what do they really not want? What motivates them? What will make them hire you? brainstorm absolutely everything you can think of. Surf the net, get on social media, see what they're talking about. Read newspapers and magazines for inspiration. Keep an eye on what's going on in that client's sector. Maybe there's some legislation that's just been brought out that they might be a bit worried about. Can you tap into that? Copy, paste, snip, collect anything that fits with your idea of what that prospect might think, feel, need and want. And this will help you to get inspired and to come up with ideas that will really attract the kind of target audience you're after. So once you've done your research and your planning, we come to the fun stuff. Or do we? No. Sorry. It was a trick. We don't come to the fun stuff. The reason we don't come to the fun stuff is because during my research for this podcast, I've come across a lot of suggestions for creative marketing ideas for small businesses that have set alarm bells ringing for me. So I wanted to share my concerns here and just kind of look into that a little bit. Now, some of the ideas that I've seen do seem to me, and I would say, either legally or at least ethically questionable. So I do want to talk briefly about that and how, in my opinion at least, and I know I would speak for Pippa here, it's best to steer clear of things that are frankly a bit dodgy, even if they look like they could get you some short-term gain. Now, one of the suggestions that set my alarm bells off was to hire a number of interns to do your marketing work for you. Now, the cheery suggestion was that interns make dollars and cents, but there was no indication anywhere, and I did look, that the interns should be paid anything. Now, this is something that Pippa and I both feel very strongly about, and in our view at least, if you can't afford stuff for your business, but you need stuff for your business to succeed, then there's a serious problem with your business plan. From our perspective, it's not acceptable for your business to be dependent on free labour. It's just not. Free labour's not a solution, it's exploiting people. So knock the idea right on the head right now. If you are desperate to do some business development and you're thinking, maybe I could get some graduates to do it for me, or maybe I could get some people who are looking for work to do it for me. Really think carefully, because it's not, if you're a freelancer and you have a small business, it's not like you're in a position where you can take on an intern or two or five or ten and then offer them a realistic opportunity for a job afterwards. So be really, really careful with things like that. I would say to steer clear on all counts. I've also seen suggestions that fly posting is a good idea, and that, for example, gluing flyers to the front of newspapers is a good idea. It's not. It's probably illegal. I'm not a lawyer, but if you start sticking things to other people's products, publications, that's, yeah, it's probably legally dodgy and it's definitely annoying, and I can't see it winning your business any real brownie points in the long term. So for this podcast, we're going to be focusing on how to develop creative ideas that aren't spammy and that are slightly, that have a bit more integrity, I would hope. In terms of long-term benefits, I always find, and again, I know I speak for Pip when I say I always find that ethical and professional works best, even if it might take a little bit longer. So, moving on to the creative side of things, while only you will know what's suitable for you, your business, your objectives, your target market, there are certain things that you can do to try and ensure that you do come up with some good, workable, actionable ideas. Now, the key to a creative marketing idea is that it's unique and it captures the imagination of your particular target audience. For that reason, I can't come up with a creative marketing idea for you now. I don't know you, I don't know your business, I don't know your business objectives, I don't know your target audience. That's something that you're going to have to go through. So what I'm going to do now is go through some of the criteria that you can bear in mind when you're looking to come up with a creative marketing idea. And a lot of these feed into one another. So hopefully at the end of this podcast, you'll be able to sit down, juggle them around in your mind, keeping in mind your own needs, and come up with something that works for you and your target audience. First off, emotional marketing campaigns work a treat. If you can make your prospects laugh from their belly up, you're probably onto a winner. from where I'm standing, intelligent, topical, relatable humour is one of the best ways to get your prospects' heads where you want them to be. Now, toilet humour, crude humour, saucy humour, even rude humour might look like an easy option, but I would suggest avoiding those kinds of things. Remember that whatever you do has to fit your brand. So unless your brand is something that's controversial, rude, cheeky, say if you're like a comedy blogger, unless that's your brand, I would steer clear of things that are controversial or potentially offensive or rude or anything more than gently saucy, shall we say. If you're not looking for wit and you do want to be a bit sillier without being controversial, and that's fine, everybody likes a giggle, surreal humour and absurdist humour are very good options. Now, what I mean by surreal and absurdist humour are just things that you just look at and go, I'm laughing, but I don't know why I'm laughing. There's a picture that springs to my mind. It's floating around the internet. I can't tell you how long it's been out there. I saw it quite a while ago. But there's a sign outside a pub reading, roses are red, violets are blue, poems are hard, bacon. And I always think that would have made like really good flyer copy for a copywriter, for example, because you could finish up with something like, need help finding the right words, get in touch, because you will have made people laugh without resorting to being crude. So you might not decide to go with humour at all, and other strong emotions can work just as well for marketing, so do use your imagination. Tapping back into what I said about clients potentially being worried about legislation coming in, if you can tap into their worries and their fears, you know, it might well work. Depending on what you're trying to achieve and who you're trying to target, you can make people feel sad or worried or envious. And this can all help you to achieve your goals, because as long as you move someone emotionally, you've got a better chance of getting through to them rationally. You've tapped into their sense of humour, their worries, their envies, their needs, their wants, their motivations, so they're listening. One emotive campaign that actually really caught my attention was by Amnesty International. And if you don't know them, they're a global human rights organisation that campaign against things like the death penalty, torture, rape, incarceration, other abuses like those. And they run a campaign using public transport. Now, when you're on a bus, you've got those little hanging straps that you can hold onto and make sure you don't fall on people as you go around corners. And in each of the little straps, Amnesty arranged for a flyer in the shape of a person to be inserted. Now, these little flyers were in the shape of people with their hands tied behind their back. And the front of the flyer was a photograph of a person with a blindfold on, and they had bruises on their faces, and they looked like torture victims, basically. So what passengers on that bus saw were people being hanged. And it's shocking, it's horrible, but it's very powerful. Because when you look at people who are responding to the campaign, because there were photos of people looking at these flyers, they're holding the flyers, they're looking at them, they're reading what's on the back, and that's exactly what you want. Now, a rectangular leaflet probably wouldn't have had the same effect. It's because it's so unique that it's really achieved something. And you might be thinking, oh, but I don't have the resources for something like that. But the point is that the power of the campaign came from the imagination rather than the number of leaflets or the subject matter. It came from the shape of the flyer, the positioning of the flyer, and not the money behind the organisation, because Amnesty, while it's a huge organisation, it's not a for-profit company, so it doesn't have oodles and oodles and oodles of cash to spare. A flyer isn't, in the grand scheme of things, a flyer's not a high expenditure piece of marketing. So it's not that difficult to take this idea and adapt it for your own needs if it's sparked your imagination. Secondly, and it kind of follows on from the emotive campaigns idea, interactive campaigns work very well. If you can get your prospects to interact with your marketing campaign, you're over a first very big hurdle, because interaction is what you want. You want your clients to voluntarily want something to do with you. Now, where you can talk at your prospects, you can give somebody a flyer and they read it, that's you talking at them, that's you talking to them. If you can get them to interact with you, it's more of a two-way channel, and that's a really, really positive thing. People don't like to feel like they're being targeted and sold to all the time. So if prospects can have some kind of meaningful relationship with you, and I'm not talking buying a house, car, and having two kids, I'm talking about them paying attention to you as long as you need them to, that eases some of the pressure there. Now, the way to get someone to interact with something is to tempt them into it by connecting with them, and this is how it taps into the first option, emotionally. If you can make something fun or funny or shocking or cute, people often won't be able to resist interacting. Now, humans can be horrible. Sometimes you can look at the world and go, ugh, God, I hate people. But we can actually be pretty nice as well. You know, humans, we're funny creatures, and we like to feel connected. And I think this is why these creative types of marketing work so well. If you give your prospects, a few examples. If you give your prospects a toy, or if you give them something edible, or if you give them a photo opportunity, something to fill out, something to colour in or to doodle on, or anything else you can think of, you captured their imagination. And if your marketing message is strong enough, and that's a matter of your offering and your content both being strong, you should be well on your way to winning new business from that. One of my favourite examples of interactive marketing was by Rock Radio FM, and they did something really lovely, which was to put an empty guitar stand out on the street, offering people, with a big sign, offering people a free air guitar. Now, there aren't many people who can resist a freebie, even an imaginary one, and there are loads of people who would leap at the chance to do something stupid and get playing a free air guitar, either for their friends on the street, or stick it on YouTube, or Instagram, whatever. It's a brilliant idea, and it's sweet, and it's not dirty, it's not crude, it's not rude, it's just fun. It's fun and it's nice. Now, one of the real benefits of this kind of marketing is that people will share things that they find unique and clever and funny and interesting across social media platforms, even if they're not the person in direct contact with the marketing material itself. If they see someone else enjoying a type of marketing, they'll share that. You know, they want to be the first person to talk about this. People value social media interactions and retweets and repins on interest. So if somebody spots something cute or interesting or arresting in some way, even if it wasn't them who enjoyed it, they'll share it, and that's just brilliant. It's extra exposure. So you could find yourself reaching more prospects than you'd originally planned. The third point to bear in mind, and this again taps into the second point, is that your marketing should be relatable. Whether you tap into something like observational humour, for example, like all the funny things that we seem to do and how everybody seems to play air guitar in their bedroom when there's a good song that comes on, or nostalgia, for example, to grab people's attention. You know, if you say if you want to tap into people being born in the 80s or people growing up in the 90s, you can use clever analogies and metaphors to make something specific relatable. Whatever you do, it's important that your prospects feel that your material is aimed at them and that you understand them, you, your business, that you get them. Because it's not good to have people feel like you're targeting them purely as a sales exercise, which, if we're honest, usually you are. You know, you're not looking for friends, are you? You're looking for clients. But it's good for your prospects to feel that your material is speaking to them and that you get them. Because if you get them, you can meet their needs. Another way to be a bit more creative about your marketing is to avoid the same old flyers, posters, advertorials, etc., and to produce something that's of real value to your prospects. This could be something content marketing related, such as a blog post or an informative picture shared across social media, or an ebook, or a YouTube tutorial, easy for me to say, a YouTube tutorial on how to, say, get the most out of a press release. Or it could be a freebie. You could get a branded up product from a business supplier, and as long as you choose something good quality and useful to send to your prospects, it could be something typical, like a mug or a pen or a calendar, or it could be something more unusual. I remember when I was working as a secretary eons ago, we had a company who, they were quite cheeky actually, but I still remember them, so it obviously worked. They sent us in a tiny little box of chocolates. And we were thrilled, obviously. You know, we were the secretaries. We opened all the post. So when a box of chocolate comes through the post, hurrah, frankly, makes a change from invoices. And we opened the box of chocolates and it was empty. And inside it said, if you'd have answered our call last month and arranged a meeting with us, we would have sent you some chocolates. And we were devastated, and it was so cheeky. We were like, ugh, such cheek, because we'd been so close to free chocolate and not got it. I swear I could smell chocolate in the box. It's devastating. And it really caught our attention. And to soften the blow, the next week they did send us a little tiny mini box of chocolates to try and tempt us. And we did talk to them. They're a recruitment agency. And while we didn't need any staff at the time, we were impressed they'd gone to that much effort to send us something. So while chocolate's not useful, nobody's going to turn down chocolate. If you manage to capture somebody's attention, that's one thing. But if you give them something that will last a little while longer, something physical, it's a bonus that there'll be a reminder of you on their premises. You know, if you sent them a branded calendar, for example, there'll be a reminder of you, your services, your contact details floating around their office or premises for the next 12 months. You know, that's assuming they decide to keep whatever you've sent to them, which is a good reason if you're going to send something physical to make sure it's good quality and not just a bit of rubbish. So if your prospects feel like they're getting something of good quality for nothing, whether it's something physical or going back to the content marketing stuff, then they're more likely to be in a position where they're receptive to a pitch from you, because they will have already benefited from interacting with you, even just via your marketing material or content. And that gives you a talking point to open discussions with, and it gives you an opportunity to discuss with them how you could be even more useful to them, i.e. if they hire you. Another way to approach this particular technique is to deliver the value in person, so you can get straight into the pitch to your targets. So some ways to do that would be giving a talk at a networking event, offering a free tutorial on social media or copywriting to local business groups, hosting a Google Hangout. These are all ways to offer something of value to people while you're there. Send out your invites, prepare your pitch, and you've already got a foot in the door when people say, yes, please, I'm interested. So there we are. You know, that's a few pointers when it comes to thinking up creative marketing techniques. And it can be a bit of a brain fry to try and come up with something unique that will capture the imaginations of your target and also keep aligned with your branding and not misrepresent you and also help you achieve your objectives. But the good thing about it is that once you've got your head around it, anybody can do it. Regardless of how tight your budget is, how tight your time is, social media in particular makes this kind of marketing so much easier. If you make your ideas unique and you make them apply to your target audience and you make sure they're in keeping with your brand and they give some kind of value, whether they're informative or entertaining, and you make them easy to share, whether it's because they're so imaginative and attention-grabbing that people want to, or because they're designed to be easily passed on via social media, you're onto a winner. Give your prospects every reason to get in touch. The various ideas that you can come up with themselves, they are infinite. So as I said earlier, I can't go into them here. I could just list idea after idea after idea. But really, the best thing to do is to sit down and decide, again, as I say, who your target audience is, what your brand is, what your objectives are, and what kind of capabilities you have, whether you have a little bit of money to spend and could perhaps go with a freebie for somebody, or if you don't have money but you have time so you could come up with something in person or on social media. What I will do, however, is post a list of different kinds of marketing activities on my website, and you can find a link to that at our podcast page, which is again alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com. What I will do is I'll split marketing activities into various categories, such as marketing materials, email marketing, direct marketing, relationship building. What you can do is basically come and grab that list and start popping any ideas that you have into each different section, and that will just help you to organise your potential marketing plans a little bit and decide which one's right for your objectives and your target audience right now. So I hope that's been a helpful introduction to how to make sure you come up with the right kind of creative marketing ideas. Freelancers depend on being able to attract new business, but we also depend on being able to attract the right kind of business and without spending a fortune. So have a look at the list that I'm going to pop on my website and try and devise some kind of creative marketing strategies that will work for your business, your objectives, and your target audience. Step outside the ordinary with your marketing, and you're so much more likely to stand out from the crowd when prospects are looking to hire that it can only be a good thing. So now it is time, drumroll, for the Little Bird Told Me recommendation of the week. It's exciting, I know. My recommendation this week, and I'm so pleased I haven't forgotten one, comes on the back of Pip and I being in the middle of a two-part series about economising. Episode 48, if you haven't already listened to it, was all about how not to waste money and how to make savings with your small business. And we'll be finishing off that topic next week for episode 50. Haha, 50. While I was floating around on social media this week, and I do float around a fair bit, I spotted something that fits in quite nicely with a point that Pip made as we were recording last week's episode, and that's that it's good to know about finances, even if, like me, you're not naturally a particularly taxy, financy savvy sort of person. Because the better you understand figures and all things financy, the better you can look after your own money. Because even if you get an accountant on to help you, say, do your monthly accounts or do your annual tax return, it's important for you to be able to, firstly, to understand what they tell you, and secondly, to know how that will influence your bank balance and your business and how that should influence your behaviour. For that reason, my recommendation this week is something that I spotted on a website called freelanceadvisor.co.uk. Now, this is a UK-centric site, so the advice might not be completely right for other listeners. You know, there may be terms that are different in other countries, say in the States, in Australia, Asia, wherever, but it's worth a nosy. They have published a glossary of accountancy terms for freelancers. Now, it's a brilliant A to Z of all those words and phrases that your tax advisor or your accountant or your financial advisor or your bank manager might trot out, and you might be sitting there nodding and smiling with no idea what they're talking about. And there's no shame in that. You know, if you're a freelance writer, it's probably because you have a background in writing. Like me, for example, I have A-levels in English, German, French, Spanish, and general studies. Tax did not come into it. Financial management? Mm-mm. No way. I did a degree in interpreting and translation, and I did a master's in German studies. No tax, no finance. So, I'm almost 30, but at the same time, I sometimes sit there and think, how have I got to this age without understanding a bit better about my own finances? So these things need tackling. You have to do what I'm doing. You have to join me in tackling finance and tax. It's horrible, but you have to. Now, this A to Z is brilliant. It's broken down into easy-to-understand language, and it's formatted for easy reference. And as well as the more complicated stuff, there are some quite basic terms on there. And I say basic, they are if you know them. But things as simple as salary. And there are some specific kinds of finance and tax legislation listed there as well that you might well need to know about. Bookmark the page, copy and paste the information into a Word document, save it in your admin folder, whatever. Just keep the list handy and have a look over it when you get 5 minutes. Because just as marketing is part of freelance writing, so is managing your money. You're running your own business, and it's unfortunately not something you can avoid. And I say unfortunately, you're the one that gets the profits, so it's well worth doing. Get your nose out of whatever book it's in, sit down, have a proper look through all these terms, and once you know them, life will be a lot easier to manage, and who doesn't want that? So that brings us neatly to the end of episode 49 of the A Little Bird Told Me Freelance Writing Podcast. Fabulous podcast. As ever, I hope you really, really enjoyed this episode. Come and give us some feedback at alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com. Try and be kind. You can also find all the links to our social media feeds there. So if you want to tweet us, tweet us. If you want to Facebook us, Facebook us. However you get in touch, don't forget to subscribe while you are there. You'll get every new episode delivered straight to your inbox, which will make tuning in easier than ever. Pip and I will be back together next week, thank the Lord, with the second in our series on how to stop your small business wasting money. In the meantime, I've been Laurie Hartshorn, and thank you so much for listening.